Good morning. Some of you are still taking places, but I'd say in this track on ASP.NET development, I'm going to do the first two sessions. First session is, you could say, just a high-level overview of the new features, smaller new features of ASP.NET 4.5. We'll also have a look at what's new in Visual Studio 11 related to web development and with ASP.NET web forms. My name is Jurgen Postelmans. For quite a while, I've been working at U2U, both as a trainer and as a consultant. The agenda of this first session, well, basically, like I said, we'll just start by having a high-level overview of the Visual Studio 11 enhancements. Well, we'll have a look at, let's say, the new and enhanced editor for web forms, some small changes in the CSS editor, and then also some small changes that Microsoft did include for the JavaScript editor. Probably all of you have used the ASP.NET validation framework that has existed since quite a while in ASP.NET. Well, again, there we have some small enhancements around what is called unobtrusive validation. And you could also say related to a little bit security, since quite a while ASP.NET has had what is called request validation, where if you try to post what he thinks is dangerous data back to your ASP.NET web forms, he would throw an exception and basically say, hey, what you post me here, I don't trust, so I'm not going to process it. So also there are some small security enhancements. Also related to cross-site scripting, there are some small changes in Visual Studio 11 and ASP.NET 4.5 that we're going to have a look at. And then the last part is on bundling and minification. And the section that I will do after the break then basically talks about a new model binding infrastructure of ASP.NET web forms. And there are some of the things we're going to see in this session. We're going to use that over there. Now, just, you could say again, a couple of small new features. Well, if you start Visual Studio 11 and you say, create me a new website, out of the box, Visual Studio is not going to use the built-in ASP.NET development server anymore. He's basically falling back to IIS Express and that limited subset of the real SQL Server as the default web server. For backwards compatibility, like I said, ASP.NET web server is still built-in. Also, you could say, related to the default database system that VisualStudio.NET is going to use, well, it will not be SQL Express anymore. Because if you look in SQL Server 2008 or 2008 Release 2, well, there Microsoft said SQL Express actually has a dual purpose, where on one side it was used to host a kind of small to medium-small databases in a production environment. But also SQL Express was being used by developers to develop databases on their local PC and then maybe move them over later to a SQL Express, SQL Standard, or an Enterprise Edition. And in SQL 2012, they split up that distinction, where they say, well, SQL Express, you should use that for hosting, again, small, mid-size databases. And then we bring out, you could say, yet another version of SQL Server 2012, which is called LocalDB. And LocalDB, unlike a real SQL Server, doesn't run as a Windows service. It has a little bit the same functionality as SQL Express, but with that difference is that it runs in user mode, and a tool like Visual Studio can basically spin up any number of instances of LocalDB. And there is the last thing, but that one I can't show you yet, is that if you look at web development today, well, you have web forms, you have MVC, you have web pages, and a little bit each of these come with their own templates built in that differ from system to system. Well, they're going to try, it's not yet there, but they're going to try to have unified project templates over all these three different technologies by which you can build mobile websites. So if you would, let's say, launch Visual Studio and just quickly show you like a file, new project, and a C#, let's say a web application. And like before, when you create a web application, it's configured to use forms-based authentication out of the box. And the fact that he doesn't use SQL Express anymore, well, if I just have a quick look at the web.config there, you will see that now a connection string is defined there that basically says, oh, the data source is localdb slash v11, that's SQL Server 2012 localdb, which would mean if I start this website, automatically an instance of localdb SQL Server 2012 will come online in reuser mode. And it's like before, dynamically going to attach the ASP.NET database in which my users, my roles, and everything else can be stored. Also, the fact that he uses IIS Express, well, if you now right-click on your project, go to Properties, and go to the web top, and scroll a little bit down, well, here... it basically says, by default, use local IIS Express, where he suggests me to create a virtual directory on this particular URL. So it's just some very quick, small enhancements to the environment of Visual Studio itself related to web development. You could say, what else do we have? Well, they did do some enhancements in the so-called HTML editor. If I would... let's take this version of Visual Studio. If I would say in here, add me a new web form. Let's just call it, I like, customer info.aspx. And if in there, like before from your toolbox, you would drag in like a grid view. Well, when you go to the design mode, for quite a while, again, you have the smart task window. But this one, you could say, was missing from your source code. Now in the source code, if you select a server control, well, you have that blue squiggle there. If you hover with your mouse over it, a small arrow will pop up. And if you click it, about the same, but not exactly the same, a smart task window opens up to say, well, hey, you might want to set a data source. You might want to configure the different columns that you would like to display in that grid. Some other enhancements that you have in here, if you would say, well, this div, well, it shouldn't be a div, but a section. Well, the moment you start like editing either the closing or the opening tag, automatically the corresponding closing tag in this case gets removed. And then if I say, well, it should be a section, automatically, again, and the closing tag gets changed to a section. And say the next thing is not really new. It was already supported by Visual Studio 2010, but it was not yet enabled by default. But if you said, well, I need a button with a certain ID, well, there, again, not enabled by default in 2010, you would manually have to write the opening, closing quotes to give the button an ID, like save. If you would say, like, we need a run at server attribute, automatically you will just add that. And then maybe a little bit more important, if you have been using with maybe Silverlight or a WPF, and you say, well, that button needs to handle the click event, well, you have the on-click event, and automatically from your source code, you can now basically generate a new event handler for that particular event. He shows you in the IntelliSense the already existing event handlers that match the description for the on-click event, but I don't have one yet, so if I'll just double-click in here, and before I forget, close the on-click, well, basically in my customer info page, there he wrote that code snippet for my event handler. So these, like I said, are some smaller enhancements that I made to the HTML editor. You could also say, well, what if that combination of a grid and a simple button, that's something I would like to reuse on several pages. Well, in ASP.NET, from the begin days, you have had the concept of what is called a user control. Well, if you now have a piece of HTML or combination of HTML server controls, you can basically just select it and then say, like, hey, extract me this piece out of my page into a separate user control. Moment you do that, he's going to ask you, well, what should your user control be called? For instance, user control product grid. And then the user control will be generated. He will modify your source page. You see now, first of all, he registered the user control in there. Secondly, and on the place where we want the user control, where the highlighted code was, well, there he added the reference to the user control itself. Now, it's still a little bit limited. In that sense, I had my button click event generated. Well, if you would go to the code behind of my user control, you won't find it there. I did explicitly generate it in the customer info.aspx file. So I'd actually still have to like copy and paste this one into my user control to get everything to work. So let me delete this. So I don't really need it anymore. And that's the user control he did generate with my grid view and the button. And let me close this. And let me get rid of the user control itself. The register tag. And here, user control delete. Like this. So some small enhancements to the HTML editor, especially the source code editor of ASP.NET Pages. They also did include some enhancements to support HTML5. You might have seen that the moment I did create this page at the top, he added the doctype HTML declaration. Plus, also note that they add the XML namespace declaration. And in terms of, you could say, providing IntelliSense in here, well, we have had this combo box showing all these supported HTML standards out of which we could select for IntelliSense and validation. Now, in front of that one, they did add here this use doctype button, which basically tells Visual Studio, well, you should scan the ASPX page, see whatever document declaration is in there. He will find this. So he says, well, fixed, I will target XHTML5. Takes sometimes a couple of seconds, but if you remove this, well, then he will just say, like, now we're targeting HTML5. If I would remove the doctype altogether, and you have an HTML4S snippet, which will basically insert the doctype declaration for an HTML4 strict. And at that moment in time, again, combo box just changed. He scanned my document. Let me undo this. Now, in case you would say, well, that automatic parsing of my document, he shouldn't do that. I would like to have my good old regular combo box back. Well, basically, you can just unpress the button, use the doctype of the page. At that moment in time, you have your good old combo box back, out of which we can select like XHTML, XHTML1.1, HTML for validation. So that's, you could say, a first thing. Second, they did enhance some of the ASP.NET controls for having like HTML5 support, and especially around the text box and the upload control. Because in the HTML5 standard, you have all these different text modes that your browser can support, like a color, date, daytime local, and so on. So if I would quickly in my section, let's say in here, we'll add a field set. With, first of all, a legend, let's say like customer info. And if I would add an ASP text box, let's just give it the ID name with the runnet server attribute. And then there is the text mode property, where you saw the same choices as we had on the slide, where we can say, well, what does this actually display? A color, a date, a daytime, month, and so on. Now, of course, you have to see it's the browser who also has to support this. And if I open up that page later in Internet Explorer 9, well, Internet Explorer 9 doesn't have any support for these yet, but Chrome, for instance, already supports some of them. And also Internet Explorer 10, that will probably ship with Windows 8, and will also support these new text modes of HTML5. So the reason why I said it's still a little bit in its infancy, Because if you say, well, I would like to have a placeholder, display a piece of text in the text box if the user hasn't typed in it anymore, well, you start seeing red squiggles when I type like placeholder and then equal to type your name here, and let me then close it. To show you the rest of them, and let me first add me this in an ordered list and move this in there. Come on. Copy. Move this in. And of course the legend at the top. Well, I have a small snippet for the rest of the form. Let me just paste that in. Snippet.txt. And copy. And then back. And then list. Let's say we'll do that in here. So basically, and I remember this when we talk about the CSS styling, we have our field sets with in there like a legend displaying that ordered list. And in that ordered list, I have a first list item with just a text box again in there. Move that in here. Up. And come on. And then this. And let's say for the rest, for instance, here we have a text box ID and where the text mode is set to email. And there is another text box where the text mode is set to, well, it should be displayed as a number with a minimum value of 18 and a maximum value of 65. Birth dates, well, that's going to be a date. We have here a text box URL, text mode is set to URL. So, let me check, and let's use doctype. And come on, if I would open up that page in my Internet Explorer, so just like a view in browser. Well, like I said, Internet Explorer doesn't currently support these parts of the HTML5 standard. But if I open it up in Google Chrome and just paste it in. Well, you see that there my number field is displayed with the up-down control, where if I click up, because the minimum value was 18, we start from 18. If I would say like 64, up, well, I can't go any higher than 65, because again, it says maximum value is 65. Same thing for like the URL. If you say like, oh, if you want to now submit the page, he's actually going to give an error saying, well, this is not a URL. Here you see my placeholder, type your name here, placeholder, enter your email address. Where they also did some small changes in terms of, you could say, HTML5 support. Well, I have the file upload control. And accordingly to the HTML5 standard, you should be able to upload multiple files at once. So the file upload control has a new property called allow multiple, to basically allow you to upload multiple files at once. You also see this reflected in the server-side object model. If I would add another list item, which just a button, let's say ID would just be save, run at server, and then the value, sorry, the text, I should be able to like save. And again, with what we saw before, well, I need the on-click event handler, create a new event, save click. And in the code behind, well, there in the object model, in the server-side object model of my upload control, I believe it's called upload. No, what did I call it? Here, images, it's called. So there are actually now two new properties. You have like has files. Did we upload files through the control, yes or no? So I could write something like, hey, if he has some files present, well then, I could just loop over them with a simple for each statement, for each HTTP posted file in. And the server control has had the file property of posted file property to say, give me the file that was uploaded. Now we can upload multiple files. So we have the posted files, where I'm not really going to do anything with them, but you could say like, oh, debug dot write line, and then we just dump to the debug window the name of the files that were uploaded. And let me import the namespace system.diagnostics. And again, if I go to my Google and select display me this page, choose files, no file chosen, and I could take a couple of PowerPoint presentations. I'm not running in debug mode, but the moment I hit the save button, and I forgot one field, this one is mandatory, and you will see like here the validation errors. Please enter a valid email address because the text mode is email. So like Jurgen at utu.be, let's say an age of 40, birth date 1/1/2001. Again, save. This is not a valid URL. Microsoft.com. And then the save. Well, then basically he posts that data together with the three files to the server. And we can process those files at once. So there are some, again, smaller enhancements to ASP.NET and also Visual Studio in terms of HTML5 support. Also in the CSS editor, they did some smaller enhancements where, for instance, you have now support for vendor prefixing built in the IntelliSense. There is a small color picker built in that you will see in a moment. There are some new CSS snippets that you can use for often used CSS constructs. And then if you start defining your CSS selectors in a kind of hierarchical way, you will actually see that they become indented automatically. So let's quickly show you this. I have a folder called styles. If I would say, like, add me a new style sheet in there. Let's say style sheet. Let's just keep the default name, style sheet 1. And let's get rid of this. And if you think about my form, I had my section that had a field set that had an ordered list in it. So you could say, well, for the section, we write a selector. And I told you, he has this color picker built in, where you could say, well, the background color should be equal to. And then that color picker is displayed. Now what you will see is that if you use this very often and you select the same colors, again, over and over and over, is that the most used colors will start coming at the front. Plus, probably not much people are going to do this, but you can extend this to automatically display your specific company colors automatically in the beginning so that you can easily select them. If I click the plus button, we can select any color we like. There is a color picker. If I say, well, that's the color I actually want, for instance, where my cursor is, well, then we just pick that particular color. So sometimes useful to select and pick a color from the screen or select one of the built-in colors. I told you he has support for code snippets built-in. For instance, if you say, well, I would like to have in CSS 3 rounded corners, well, you have the border. Oh, sorry. The border radius. And if I just press top, like you always do with code snippets, well, he writes the border radius, but also the vendor prefixing, all of them there, where I can say, for instance, I want a border of like 10 pixels, 10 pixels in there. And then automatically, you could say, every changes. So the bottom line there is, you have the code snippets. Secondly, he knows now about Visual Studio, now knows about the vendor prefixes, where you can say, like, if you write dash Mozilla, dash WebKit, or dash MS, and then you have all the vendor prefixes for the Microsoft browser, WebKit-based browsers, Mozilla browsers, and so on. Okay. And let's say the section was the first thing. Underneath the section, I had my field sets. And if I would type like section and then field sets, and watch what is going to happen when I write my opening and closing curly bracket. He actually understands that this selector section field set is a child, you could say, of the previous one, and he automatically indents it. So Derek would say, like, hey, the border radius, let's say the border, let's just say the border to like none, for instance. And like this, you can basically continue. In my section, I had my field set, and in there, my ordered lists. So like a section with one T, and then field sets, and then the ordered list. Again, opening, closing of the curly brackets will automatically indent this. C-sharp or VB have had what is called in the IntelliSense statement reduction automatically built in for quite some time. But if you say here, I want to get rid of these numbers in front of my ordered list, and you know there is like a CSS style that you could say is called the list style. Well, when you start typing list or style, he just was going to limit the IntelliSense to those keywords that actually contain that substring. So you could say like list style is equal to none, for instance, like this. He has other, you could say, code snippets built in for like if you want to write media query, there is the media query code snippet. If you say like, if you hover over an image, well, then maybe I would like to do a transform on it. Well, you have the transform code snippet, transform origin, transform style that you can just select again, top. And what is on, friends, what you would like to do? Well, rotate the image and with like 90 degrees. So these are again the enhancements that Microsoft did include in the CSS editor. Now let me save this one. And let's go to my page customer info. And let me just include this one. Let's say just drag it in, style sheet one, and up. And if I refresh my page in my browser, well, you see these are gone. I forgot a label there, customer info. And there's one thing wrong. Yeah, I did put a space there. Where that came from, no idea. Save and refresh. And there we go. So again, some small enhancements that you have in the CSS editor of Visual Studio 11. Next, in terms of JavaScript, what do they add there? Well, they have now full support for ECMAScript 5 and the HTML5 DOM. I'm not going to spend too much time on this, but if I take here, it's a very simple script file. I would have function say hello and add. Now, I would say for later when we talk about bundling and minification, you can clearly see that this file is not minified. You can clearly see that it has still quite some comments in it, even XML comments. Now, in terms of, you could say, JavaScript 5 or ECMAScript 5 support, if you have, like, objects, well, in the IntelliSense, you now have the freeze or the unfreeze method at your availability to, like, freeze your JavaScript object and then later unfreeze it. In terms of DOM level 5 support, well, if you say, like, document, document, Jurgen, query selector. All these functions of the DOM HTML5 are basically included in the IntelliSense of Visual Studio, in case you are already using those. So that's quick overview of the editor enhancements. Now, if you say, well, I develop pages in Visual Studio, I use that as an editor, as a debugger, but how do you test them? Well, basically, you use Internet Explorer, you use Chrome to test your pages, which basically means you launch another application and you test your applications over there. What you can do with Visual Studio 11, and you have to download and install it manually, it might even work or come out for older versions of Visual Studio as the so-called Page Inspector, which gives you a kind of live view of your ASPX page inside Visual Studio itself. From the begin days, we've always been able to say right-click, view in browser. But if you have the Page Inspector installed, you can say, well, open me this page in the Page Inspector. There are still some bugs in this tool. The way he lays out the windows is not always very great. That is going to be solved. But here, basically, you see the page inspector. And if I would go to like my customer info.aspx, he says, well, yeah, your page was actually changed since the last time you compiled. So you're not seeing the latest version. Hit Control Alt Enter to refresh. Let's just say like Control Alt Enter. And then basically he renders the page inside the browser. There you see a couple of things. First of all, you see, again, on this small resolution, it's difficult, but the HTML page, you get your DOM with all the HTML that is generated. You get the styles if you select something. Now, if I would click this button and say, well, go to inspection mode, well, quite often you're wondering, well, that control for like birth date or that save button or that browse button in front of at the end of my upload, well, which server control that actually generates that piece of HTML? Well, in that inspection mode, you can basically hover over any of your controls. And I told you there are still some display bugs in it. But if I hover over this text box, well, on the right side, in a gray background, he says, well, that one is actually being generated by that text box that is highlighted in gray there. If you go to this, well, that's actually that image upload control that we have with that allow multiple on true. Same thing for the save button. The annoying thing is the scrolling here, even if you set it like to the beginning, and then if you go to browse, he still starts scrolling in this resolution. You only see a part of it. If you try to go back, you see you screw up everything a little bit. So that needs to be fixed. And if the window is large enough, and when you select a control, you not only see in the ASPX file, well, which server control did generate that HTML, but also on the left bottom side in the HTML window, there he says, well, what you're seeing there is actually corresponding to this HTML, the input name birth date with a type of date, here the URL, image, and the URL, and the image, and so on. Plus, let me make this a little bit larger. If I take, for instance, and sometimes you have to point a little bit to find it. But if I take here my section, while on the middle part in the window down, and there he's going to tell you which CSS styles he did apply to that particular section that you selected. If I can't find, here is my ordered list, for instance. And sorry, on that ordered list, I did add here the list style type and set it to none. So if I say like, hey, I'll turn this style that I added myself, I turn it off, and then you see my numbers again in front of the ordered list items. So it's a kind of live inspector of the DOM and of the CSS. In the first window there, he says, well, that list style that you set with to none actually comes from your style sheet called stylesheet1.cs. If you go to trace styles, there it's more in the opposite way. If you say, well, this one, the list style type set to none, where did one come from? Well, it comes from this particular file. And this one comes maybe from another file. And there, style by style, he shows you which CSS file it was actually defined. In case you start working with margins, paddings, and so on controls, you actually have the layout tab there where you can say, well, what is the size of the selected control, what is its padding, the border, the margin, and the offset. And these are all displayed in the layout window. And then the last part, let's say it not only allows you to like inspect the DOM, but you can also add attributes to any place in the DOM. I think I still have my ordered list selected. If I would say, like, add me an attribute there, and it never changes back your source code, but if I would add, like, a style attribute, and then say, like, hey, something we can very easily see, font-size is, like, 20 or 20 pixels. Well, at that moment in time, because I added that attribute, the style equal to font size 20 pixels, you saw that the fonts became a little bit bigger. If you've done your testing, you can basically just remove it. So the page inspector, again, you download it manually. And then it can be used to inspect the live DOM, the live CSS inside Visual Studio itself. One thing there, the moment you run this and install this the first time, it's actually going to modify your web.config. In your app settings section, he is going to add this entry in here, Visual Studio design time enabled to true. Don't remove it, because the next time you run the page inspector, it will be placed back there again. And he needs this to correctly work. Again, it could be that this is backported to older versions of Visual Studio itself. So that was, I could say, the page inspector. In terms of the validation, well, like I said in the introduction, since the very beginning days of ASP.NET, we have validation controls built in. And we can configure these validation controls to do validation on the client with JavaScript. But the way they did it, you could say, was that they injected quite some JavaScript, especially if you have a lot of server controls, validation controls in that page. And that JavaScript typically went at the back of the page, underneath everything, and also a little bit of JavaScript was injected in the, well, you could say, in the middle of the page. So your source was a little bit more cluttered. It increased the page size. And to actually show you this, I have to undo something in here. Let me get rid of this app settings. And if I would request my page here called customer info, I quickly say view in browser, and then view source. Well, the fact that we have the validation controls in there shows up here at the bottom, because there we have all the JavaScript. Also, if I would scroll to the top, there would be some more JavaScript. Well, with ASP.NET 4.5, he will automatically basically add this into your web.config. That's why I had to remove it and to show you the old situation. What will this do? Well, basically, it's now going to use a combination of, well, both jQuery and the HTML5 data dash attributes to implement the client-side validation. When I rerun the page in a moment, and if I turn on the network tracing, you will see my page actually downloads jQuery. It will download a second JavaScript file in which Microsoft rewrote the client-side validation functions using jQuery internally. Plus, on my controls, like my text boxes, you will find some extra data attributes. So I did undo it. Let's see. And right-click, view source. And if I first go to the bottom, well, there is no trace anymore of that large piece of JavaScript. Why? Well, first of all, what you should see here on my, for instance, input name email, there underneath we have the span, and there you have those HTML5 data attributes to say, well, what control do I have to validate? Oh, that control called email. If it's not valid, what error message do I have to display? Email is required. And what is the actual JavaScript function I have to call? Well, required field validator. Required field validator evaluation is valid. You could say, well, where is this JavaScript coming from? Well, like I said, he is automatically going to link in jQuery, and that's this one. And secondly, he will download this JavaScript resource. And if you would look for these functions, like this one, required field validator, evaluate is valid, they're actually defined in that second JavaScript file that gets injected into the page. And that's that, you could say, so-called unobtrusive validation, because we do not clutter the HTML page itself anymore with the JavaScript. It's using jQuery, HTML5 data attributes, and a second JavaScript file that is linked in. Again, it is, if you create a new website, enabled by default, because that section out of your config file you see on the slide gets added to every new ASP.NET 4.5 project. If you don't want it, you just remove it. And one word of caution, if you would like to use it, and if you create a new project and you have jQuery automatically being added there, well, don't make the mistake that I once made and says, well, I don't use jQuery in my project. Let's delete it. He will not give any compile time error. Your pages will just work fine, except for the fact that the client-side validation will break. So leave it there, even if you do not explicitly use jQuery. Close. And this. And then, like I also said in the intro slide, since quite a while, ASP.NET has done what is called request validation, where if, for instance, I have here a page, it's a very simple page called all categories, basically just consisting of a repeater that is going to display the name of a category and the description of a category. And, let's take another one first. Let's take that add category. I can do it there, that's better. So that add category page is basically a page that just displays a name, text box, and then a description. And if I would request this page, and so like give it in the browser, and you could say like, I want to add a category called software, and in the description, if you try to type in some HTML, like test, bold, like this, well, at moment in time, if you submit it, I was going to say he will throw an exception, because he will say, well, what you typed in there, in that bold tag, that's insecure, so we have our error. No, it's this one, Jürgen, that I need to take. Sorry for this. It's this page that I need, product name, text box, and there. Because the other one is already set up and finished, view in browser. So even here, I would say like SQL Server, and then in bold, SQL Server, close the bold tag. And I say like save. Well, at moment in time, that's what I meant. You see basically the request validation of the good old ASP.NET 4.0 in action, where he says, well, yeah, but that value that you provided for the text box description contains some malicious data. I'm not going to allow this. And the only thing you could really do in ASP.NET 4.0 or earlier is basically go to your page directive and there turn the request validation mode of validate request false, because true is actually the default. False, Jürgen. And then if I build and recompile, request the form again, enter, let's say some data, bold, and whatever in there. Well, at this moment in time, because you basically told him not to validate the request, and this just came true. But the downside is you turned it off for whole the page, where you could say, well, it's maybe only for this particular control that we would like to disable this. Well, let me first undo this. So let's turn request validation back on for the whole page. And what they did add here in ASP.NET 4.5 is that a lot of controls now have a new property called validate request mode to say, well, that control should it participate in the validation. And if I say, well, that large text box, no, it shouldn't. Well, let me go to source mode. And this is the larger text box. And there I can say, like, request validate request mode is disabled. By default, the value there is inherit, take whatever the page says. And before I make and run this, let me go to the code behind file here and uncomment this, where we basically take like take me the text I typed in the text box and place it in a simple label build and refresh the page. And let's just say like save. And at that moment in time, it did came true. Now, if I would try to write this in here, well, this one is still going to participate in the request validation. I did turn it off for that specific control, basically. You can go one step further. My text box was called text box product description. And if I would comment out this line and say like, hey, string message, and then, well, we have our request object and ASP.NET.form, and using my form variable, I'm going to access the content. Well, at that moment in time, what is called lazy validation is going to kick in. He says, well, yeah, you disabled the validation on the control itself, but here you access request.form. Well, that's still validated. So this, again, if I do not forget to compile and rerun my page, it's still going to blow up in my face. Potential dangerous request.form value was detected on that product name. And you could say to solve that particular issue, because you not only have this with a form, but also with cookies, with your session, with your query string, you really have to watch out for this. But the request object has a new property called unvalidated. Unvalidated cookies, files, forms, the headers, the path, path info, the query string, and the raw URL, and so on. So if I would say in here like request.unvalidated, and give me my text box product description. Well, like you can probably guess, this is now basically going to succeed, and it's going to display the text. No, that was wrong. I still have my browser open, Jurgen. He's basically going to display here the value. If I still have it in my clipboard, no, bold. And let's say test bold. And then here, like SQL Server and save. Well, at moment in time, in bold, that is displayed there. Now, I said you really have to watch out with this, because if you implement it as such, and where especially you write this out here into your page, the value that was typed in, if a hacker would say something like, oh, let's inject some script where, just say a stupid alert from JS, close, and then close the script tag. Well, if I press the save button, well, that script gets written there in that it's a div, and my JavaScript starts running inside my page. You also might have been wondering what is that string here at the bottom doing. Well, again, it's not really, you could say, new, but in ASP.NET 4.0, you had the default HTML encoder, which you could replace by the anti-XSS encoder that you could download from the Microsoft website. But it was not included. You had to manually hook it up in your website. And then almost, and I say almost, all the output you generate in your pages pass via the anti-XSS encoder to generate the HTML and the value of your attributes. What you will see right now is that, again, if you just create a new empty project in ASP.NET 4.5, and if I open up my web.config, he basically adds this in here, where the first part is actually from the previous topic that I talked about, the request validation mode, how should it be done, 4.0, backwards compatibility, or 4.5, what I've been using with that in the previous demo. And then encoder, well, he automatically hooks up the anti-XSS encoder, which is used in, and again, important, almost all places to generate the HTML and the value of the attributes. There are a few exceptions where he doesn't use it. And even if you remove this line and say, ASP.NET, what is the default encoder you use? Well, it will still be the anti-XSS encoder. So the fact that he includes it there is actually not necessary. Maybe that might change in the future, but it will even work without this one. And then in my page, you see here I just dump out what is the default encoder used by unobtrusive validation.aspx. Well, it says it's the anti-XSS encoder. So if I would go to Visual Studio again, that's a little bit too much stopping. But if I go to Visual Studio, to my unobtrusive validation code behind page, well, basically on the first line, You probably know that class, HTTP encoder, give me the current one, and its name is just written into that label you saw there. Since the anti-XSS encoder is the default encoder, and since he doesn't use it automatically everywhere, well, we still have the HTML of HTTP utility class. HTTP, come on. HTTP utility class with the methods HTML encode or URL encode. And when you call one of these, they now pass via the anti-XSS encoder that is built in Visual Studio 11 and ASP.NET 4.5. So if I would just quickly say, hey, HTML encode me and this message. Well, not forget to build. And then back to the browser. Let's all save the page again. And then, again, you see that alert doesn't pop up. The script that I typed in was nicely encoded. And we see the result of the encoding in here. Again, in the past, you could manually download this anti-XSS encoder and inject it manually in your website. Another area where the anti-XSS encoder is not used automatically is basically when you're doing data binding. I have here a very simple page, all categories, which, if you just first look at the source code, will say, like, hey, I'll just go into SQL Server, retrieving category name, description, from the good old Northwind database, open up a connection, creating a command object, and then via the execute reader method, we bind the result of the query to the category list here. That category list doesn't do much. It's just a very simple repeater. So here we have a repeater, item template, div, name description of the category. And then we use the good old data binding expressions, smaller than percent hash, eval function, category name, description. And the thing is, because this is a data binding expression, the anti-XSS encoder doesn't kick in, and it just outputs whatever we retrieve from the database. So if I request that page, there is one record in which the description actually has a piece of JavaScript in it. So we do the data binding, and one record, it was JavaScript, and the JavaScript started running inside my page. Now, if you would say also here and here, he should pass via the anti-XSS encoder, well, they enhanced the data binding syntax a little bit. Actually, if you just write a colon here and a colon here, you instruct the data binding infrastructure of ASP.NET to pass this output via the anti-XSS encoder and then assign it to the text property of my label, assign it to the text property of my label. So if I just make that small little change and request the page again, view in browser, well, you see there is no problem anymore. And if I scroll down here, encoded, we have that piece of JavaScript and that he just did execute. So in these cases, you could say, like with data binding, when you're manually assigning encode something like to the text property or inner HTML property of a div, you would still have to explicitly do the encoding by using that new data binding syntax, and then everything will pass in via the anti-XSS encoder. And then, let's say the last part, and we'll spend some time on this, is about what is called bundling and minification. Let's say with the sessions this afternoon, where my colleague will talk about WebSockets and so on, there, these pages typically include a lot of JavaScript. These pages might in maybe a lot of CSS if you want them to be good looking. And again, here I have a very simple page to just demonstrate the bundling and minification. The page doesn't do anything useful, let's say, but it just has here a script tag for linking in jQuery and that demo.js we saw before, and then three style sheets are referenced. So if I would open up the page with my browser, view in browser, and here I'm going to turn on, let's say first this, and here I'm going to turn on the network profiler, start capturing, and then I just give me the page. And you see that while we have an HTTP GET request for the page itself, for the style sheet, the style sheet, the style sheet jQuery. And I made the mistake, you could say, to not take the minified version of jQuery and then my demo.js script. And doing all these separate requests, I know now they can, to a certain extent, be done in parallel, has a certain overhead. Plus, you must manually make sure that these are minified. Well, if you want, let's say, with the so-called bundling and minification, ASP.NET 4.5 can basically do this for you. ASP.NET 4.5 comes with two so-called default bundles, one for JavaScript and one for CSS. And the way the default JavaScript bundling is working is that basically if you enable it, he will take all, no exception, all JavaScript files that are in a certain folder. He will sort them alphabetically, and then he will like reorder them so that what is called known JavaScript libraries like jQuery and so on are loaded first. And then your custom JavaScript libraries come in, sorted alphabetically. That default bundle has the name JS. And then if you say, well, I have some folders or some script files in a folder like these, I would like ASP.NET 4.5 to automatically bundle and minify those. Well, in your code, you just include one script tag. You provide the name of the folder, scripts, and then slash the name of the bundle, and the name of the default bundle is JS. And you will see later in the demo, but when you do this, he will bundle all these files together, minify them, and send them in one HTTP request to the client. Basically, the same thing is going to happen for the CSS bundling and minification. There you point him to a folder. He will take all the CSS files without any exception in there, sort them, and then make sure that reset or a normalized CSS are loaded before all the other CSS files in that folder. And that default bundle, well, it's called CSS. And then there is only one, you could say, link to include to the folder where you have your CSS, slash CSS, because there we use the default bundle. When you want to do this, and this is not on the slide, when you want to enable these two bundles, you actually have to modify or write one single line of code in your global application file. If I open up this one, an application start, and the bundling and minification works a little bit like the routing, for instance, in ASP.NET MVC. You have root tables, while with the bundling and minification, we have bundle tables. So there's the static bundle class, which has a... Bundles, Jurgen. Root. Come on, where is my class name? Bundles. Where is my class name? For bundle table, that's better. And then he has a collection of bundles, and you can say, like, enable those two default bundles that you just talked about. What I just mentioned is now enabled. And I have here my scripts folder with this one and this one in it. I have my styles folder with these in it. Well, they are loaded from that page called bundling and minification, and basically I can get rid of these two. I can get rid of this one, and the name of the default bundle was just CSS, and the name of the default bundle is just JS, and then save and build. And if I request the page in here, and let me clear the cache. Yes, and okay, and let's say we request that page again. You will see that the output is a lot smaller. We did a request for the page itself. because the cache was cleared, we did one request for the bundle, styles.css, and then here, scripts.css. This is the CSS, the JavaScript. If I would say, like, go to detailed view and show me what I got back from the server and the response body, well, except for the, you could say, copyright notice, and that whole file is basically bundled and minified. These files are bundled and minified. If I go quickly to the scripts folder itself, you saw there is my demo file, and I told you known libraries are loaded and bundled first, and then yours come sorted. Well, if you go to the complete bottom here, and then I have to scroll a little bit, well, you could say there, without any comment or XML comment, we have our function say hello with that alert, we call it add method, and there's my function add stripped of its XML comment, so that bundling and minification just happens automatically. Let's say stop capturing and go back. Now, you could say, yeah, that's all good and well, these default bundles, but what if I do not want to take all of these CSS files in one single bundle? I have another folder called More Scripts. Now, you could say, well, what again if you have a lot of scripts in there? What if he just should take some of them, and I would like to control the ordering? Well, a little bit like you can create your own routes, you can write your own bundles, and you do that in the global ASX. So I could even comment this out and construct like a bundle object. Let's say like var bundle JS is equal to new. You can just construct a bundle object where you say, what is the virtual path? Well, in the folder, that was called more scripts. In the folder that was called more scripts. And make sure I don't type any typing mistakes. The name of the default bundle was JS. You could say the name of my bundle is like, for instance, JS bundle. JS bundle. And then you probably want it to be minified, not only bundled. So you can say, well, which minifier does he has to use? Type of. And there are two minifiers built in. One is the CSS minify. That's, of course, not what I want. I want the JS minify. And like this. And then the bundle, the empty bundle is there. And then you can start adding files or maybe even whole directories to it. So bundle JS dot add file add directory. You can specify the ordering of the files. So like add me a file. And what do I want? Let me just say copy this part. And then we'll just take like jQuery dash 1.7.1.js. And let me copy this line once more. I forgot the comma. And then jQuery UI. .1.8.17.js. And once you have constructed your bundle, well then, a bundle table, bundles, dot add, and we'll just add ours in there, built. Okay. And if I, you could say, for the last time, go back to bundling and minification.aspx, well, it's more scripts slash JS bundle. Maybe copy it. And let's say paste it in here. This I don't even need anymore, just going to remove it. And let's go back to the browser and request the page. And I made a typo. Mm-hmm. Yeah, cut. Cut. More scripts, jQuery. Yeah. That's one. These are not, don't need those. Let's say build. Yep. And I forgot to turn on the start capturing. And let's see, build. Still the same. Did I rebuild? Build succeeded. Just clear the cache. Let's try one more time. No, I start capturing now. There we go. And then we get a 404. And there it's a capital C. More scripts. 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 More scripts. That's okay. We add it to there. And let's see in here. More scripts. JS bundle. Built. Still capturing. Still 404. That means another typo mistake somewhere. Yeah, I did rebuild. I just make sure that I say rebuild all. Rebuild. Rebuild all succeeded. Let's give it one more try. Yeah, still. Check jQuery.-171.js, jQuery UI-1.8.17.js, that's fine. More scripts. More scripts. Bundle.js. You have the bundle. JS minify. Is the name different? Yeah, JS. Let me just copy the name. My JS bundle. And there. Yeah, more scripts, jQuery. Yeah, but it should work with it. Yeah, this one here. It should work with it. But it doesn't do. Let's check. Yeah, I see, it must be this. Bundles, but let's say here it should also not be necessary. Yet, yeah, still 404. I'm making somewhere a typo mistake, this can't be. Bundling and minification. Let me just check, because I have the code here, because that's the same code that I had. Let me just paste that in and see what is wrong. Don't see any difference. Built. Let's go back. Yeah, still 404. I still have this one in front of it. That one should not be there. Yeah. More scripts. Yeah. But what you should see is that this will automatically take those two files I did add to my bundle. And then small request, there are automatically minified because I did explicitly not take the minified version of the two jQuery libraries. Let me just say. You mean this?
Maybe you have just to remove the from your source.
Bundle to add.
Not
you mean remove it here?
Not just bundle.
Now, a bundle always has a name, and what you type in here is like the virtual path to your bundle. And mine resides in more scripts. And then slash JS bundle. And then in the page where you would like to use this, it's like more scripts slash the name of the bundle he should use.
Maybe the application start campaign
doesn't work. Now it works. I don't know. Didn't change anything anymore while I was talking. But so now. 2.0, and again, I didn't change anything. Well, and if you now go to detailed view, that's the last thing, is basically, if you look at the response body, the jQuery and jQuery UI are automatically minified. So bottom line, it basically is, if you don't like the default bundling, and if you don't make any typo mistakes like I initially did, and you can come up with your own bundles, for JavaScript, for CSS. There are even some documented base classes from which you can inherit if you come up with your own great way of minifying JavaScript or CSS. So it's, you could say, fully extensible if you want. Okay. And almost quarter minute. So that's, you could say, like we said, the first session, an hour and a half, just some high-level overviews of the new features, both in the designers, small features on ASP.NET 4.5. There's now a half an hour break. I would say if you still have some questions, feel free to ask them. That's fine.